Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Second, George. Take it.
Come on, take a solo.
Rip it out, man. Let it out.
Wait.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe.
Out Now is a film podcast which has Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We also bring in a little discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a retro review that has to do with the main film of the week, games and other fun stuff. This is episode 46, and on the docket for tonight we have the new comedy from director David Wayne, Wanderlust, and we're also going to do our Oscar predictions, actually. And to joining us for these subjects at hand, we have writer for Fast Film Reviews and a man who will likely be very happy after all the Oscar winners are announced tonight, Mark Hoban.
Hi, everybody.
And writer for award contenders and a man with aspirations to shoot the moon in the face, Mark Johnson.
Hey, everybody. Happy Oscar Day.
Yay.
Toast.
If Abe and I were smarter, we would have done our predictions a week ago, and then they'd be up already before the Oscars, but we're not.
So, we had to watch Ghost Rider.
It was necessary. Few announcements. iTunes reviews and ratings. We recently got a new review, and it was cool, and she was very happy that we mentioned her last week. And we continue to like getting our reviews and ratings. It's really simple to do, really easy. It helps promote the show. Everybody wins. So that's out there. Let's see. I mentioned that we are doing our Oscar predictions later in the show. We are, and tomorrow, as the Oscars, you know, after they happen, we plan to record a results show as well. So there's going to get into things. Let's do a little know everybody, where each week we ask each other some questions to kind of set the tone for the podcast and try to get to know everybody. Let's start with Mark Johnson.
All right. Abe, what award tonight are you hoping wins most? Which one do you have the personal... most attraction to tonight?
Yeah, of the folks that are nominated?
Yeah.
I really, really want Brad Pitt to win for Best Actor in Moneyball.
Oh, that's...
I think that's that's actually my upset. Or not my upset, but that's in my category I want to win. I've mentioned that before. I watched it. Again, it's a really solid movie. Really good direction and acting overall. So that's what I really want to win.
I think all three of you had that on your top tens, am I right?
Moneyball, yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
Mark Hoban, would Wanderlust have been more enjoyable with Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston, or Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt in a weird Bad About You movie?
Hashtag 90s question.
No, I don't think it would be more enjoyable. I like Paul Rudd quite a bit, actually. And Jennifer Aniston is fine. I mean, she's not like... a great actress or anything, but I like those two as likable people, so I would prefer them. Not a big fan of Mad About You, actually. So
yes.
Aaron, what would you say is the biggest miss at this year's Oscars, meaning somebody that should have been nominated or a film that should have gotten recognition that did not?
Many people would say Drive, but I never really expected Drive to hit big at the Oscars, except for Albert Brooks as supporting actor, which was that was probably the most surprising snub, given that he and Christopher Plummer were neck and neck for supporting actor all the way. However, that's still not my answer. songs, Muppets. Where are all the other Muppet songs in this category? That's the biggest
right?
miss. The real biggest miss is the fact that we're not going to see Muppets perform these songs tonight. So,
Oh yeah.
And maybe one of you know about this, but why were the songs from Drive not? I believe they were not even eligible.
Like the score
they
did from not Drive.
The songs. All those. There was like five.
Like 80 songs.
Well, those aren't like original songs for the movie. Those are pre-recorded songs.
So that they
like
they
the Muppets. Yeah, they didn't make those songs for Drive. Like the Muppets, those songs were made for the Muppets. Same with whatever Rio is.
It goes back to things. Their rules behind song and score are extremely strict. I don't know if you remember a few years ago, There Will Be Blood. The score was deemed ineligible just because Johnny Greenwood had played it somewhere prior to recording it. He played it like one time for an audience before recording it for the film or something like that, and so it was deemed ineligible, even though it was probably the best score.
And like Dark Knight couldn't get in because I guess it was too awesome because they had two people doing it. Like that was the reason behind that one, I guess.
Yeah. They have strict rules.
Speaking to that about the weird technicalities, that song Masterpiece from Madonna's movie W.E., which, I mean, I'm not really saying that's a great song or anything, but the reason why it was deemed ineligible for the Oscars, even though it won at the Golden Globes, was because it appeared too late in the credit sequence. I mean,
it has to be the first song during the credits. If it's beyond that, then it's out.
The song category annoys me so much. Like, I always feel it should be like a song that has some kind of direct like effect in the movie. Like, say what you will about like Eminem winning a best song that year, but that song made sense in that movie. Like, it was made
it.
Throughout that entire movie. I mean, like, that's same with Hustle and Flow too.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. That was one of the greatest upsets ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think I kind of like
Six Mafia.
And then right after that, John Stewart said,
Scorsese,
3-6 Mafia 1, Martin Scorsese.
That was a great line.
Yeah. Abe, last week there was the 500 Simpsons episode. Who has been your favorite Simpson guest star?
My favorite Simpsons guest star? Wow, that is a great question. No lie. Because I love the Simpsons. I haven't really been keeping up since season 12 when things kind of feel
like... Yeah, we don't have to worry about those.
My favorite Simpsons guest episode. Oof. I think just off the top of my head, I'd say the Michael Jackson episode. He didn't actually sing the song, but he was apparently just playing himself as the big guy from the mental institution. But that was a good song for Lisa, even though he apparently didn't sing that song.
It's a good episode. So it was the other Lisa episode of Dustin Hoffman.
That's
yours, Mark.
When you ask that question, I'm like answering it in my mind.
Mr. Bergstrom!
Like,
yeah.
It was so... That's back in the days when The Simpsons were really touching and like... Yeah, there was a sensitivity or something to the cartoon that it doesn't have anymore. But yeah, that was a great episode.
Now I already said that I was all about the Muppet songs, but Albert Brooks and The Simpsons, that's where I lived.
Throw, damn you.
As Hank Scorpio and you only move twice.
Oh, no. I like him as the bowling guy.
He has had five different appearances in Simpsons episodes. And I love Hank Scorpio is what nails, because that's my favorite Simpsons episode of all time. So.
Can you kill some people on the way out?
Okay. That's a lot of Simpsons humor for a movie podcast, so let's move on.
Yeah. Mark Johnson. Who is your favorite Oscar host, and who would you want to see as an Oscar host?
Okay, favorite is easily Billy Crystal. He's the best. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan. As much as I love Jon Stewart, and I think he did a great job, but Billy Crystal, I don't think you can argue against, is the best.
Not
who do
David
I want?
Letterman?
Uma. No, I wouldn't put.
Let me disappoint. Jon Stewart had like this great thing where he's like best like dream wake up sequences, where like just people like waking up from dreams all of a sudden, and best like periscope submarine scenes. Those two, like the montages of those scenes, that made me crack up every time.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. As far as who I would want to host, that's tougher.
Puppets.
I've no. every year I keep hoping that Billy Crystal will come back. So that's, I've never really thought beyond that. But if I could just throw one off the top of my head, maybe Ben Stiller or maybe even Will Ferrell. Somebody, it's got to be somebody funny. You know, keeps like when they had like Hugh Jackman or Anne Hathaway and James Franco host, I think that's when it's not as fun if the humor doesn't keep, you know, going throughout the night. So
yeah. Hugh Jackman kept it classy, like, though. It's, he didn't do a bad job.
Yeah, though. I think he did fine. He did fine. I just,
that was a great intro.
He's Wolverine. Yeah.
Mark Oben, let's say, what is your do you have a favorite Oscar moment of all time?
Oh gosh, that's that's hard.
You sound disgusted. Oh.
Did anything ever win that you were kind of surprised won and it made you jump up about?
It's impossible for me to like guess what would be my to say what would be my favorite because I'm probably going to forget something. But when Roberto Benigni won, I did actually kind of like I didn't even really want him to win, and then he was so happy to get that award and just so genuine that I actually he kind of made me feel like okay. I'm kind of glad you won now. So, yeah, I mean, and, you know, he really never fulfilled his, I mean, promise. It, essentially, I don't know what else he's done since then.
Well, there was
then,
the classic Pinocchio movie that he made.
Right, right. That was right after, and that was not. Right. So, but that was like this one moment. He's kind of like he had his moment in the sun. And so I don't know if that is, you could probably mention something else that was better, but I did enjoy that. I mean, when he first won, he got up on the seats. He started walking
like on the
seats.
Of another guy.
Practically, Steven Spielberg was like right there, and like people were holding his hands so he wouldn't fall. So that I guess I that kind of comes
the
to
record,
mind.
He beat out Tom Hanks, Ian McKellen, Nick Nolte, and Edward Norton. It was a strong category that year.
Right, like, he beat
Norton.
Right, I think a lot of people feel like he didn't deserve the award, but I did. I liked his response to it. It was very genuine and honest.
Between those five, like, he's strong.
He's in the upcoming Woody Allen film, yes, by the way. Nero.
Mark Johnson, what would you say is the biggest upset ever at the Oscars? Something that, you know, happened in the history that you always feel like that was just, you know, that always bugs me.
Oh, I mean, as far as, you know, that bugs me, I think not in my lifetime, I would say, probably looking back and seeing How Green Was My Valley beating Citizen Kane and the whole scandal behind it with Hearst paying off voters to not vote for Citizen Kane to win since it was pretty much based on his life and made him look not so good. Mm. That one stands out as far as not in my lifetime. In my lifetime, I was pretty furious the night Crash beat Brokeback Mountain.
That's probably, even Jack Nicholson was upset.
Yeah. Yeah, that would probably be it then, those two.
Yeah, those are good choices. You know, I didn't realize that, so William Hearst did pay people off to not vote for it?
There's actually a really cool documentary on the Citizen Kane DVD there.
Yes, very good doc,
yeah. It's pretty awesome. If you like Citizen Kane, I would definitely recommend it.
It's all right. It's an all right.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting what Rosebud really referred to. Just leave it at that.
I am... I'm still furious about the 1999 Academy Awards where The Personals beat A Place in the Land for Best Documentary Short Subject, but that's a whole other story.
God, that's so obscure. I like your choice of Crash beating Brokeback Mountain, but I also always feel like Saving Private Ryan beating Shakespeare
losing
in Love was odd.
Losing Shakespeare.
Or I'm sorry, losing.
I had predicted Shakespeare in Love that year, so I wasn't as furious because I had predicted Brokeback. So that makes it even more furious when you are considered wrong.
I sided with Ebert that year because he was like, I think Crash is going to upset it, and he was right. So
that's gross.
Mark Hoban, what is your favorite Paul Rudd role?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd say for him to be like an actual acting performance, I really like him in I Love You, Man. So that would probably be my favorite like of his performances. But I probably like the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin better. You know, I think that's a better movie, but that's a little bit more based on Steve Carell. So I Love You, Man for Paul Rudd performance.
Yeah, so good, yeah. Nice choice.
Yeah.
Cool. I would say Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, but that's
You would not.
Okay, that was a little bit of no, everybody. So let's move on now to our movie trailer talk, where we kind of discuss some of the latest or newest movie trailers of the week. And first up, we have The Dictator. And this is the new Sacha Baron Cohen film, where he stars as a dictator of a fictional country, I believe. I'd assume it is.
Yes. It has to be.
And, yeah, not a lot is known about this one. It's kind of secretive so far, beyond the whole Sacha Baron Cohen's playing a fictional dictator, and there happen to be some big stars in this movie, such as Megan Fox, Ben Kingsley, John C. Reilly, Anna Faris, among others. So, only seen a few sneak previews of this one so far, but Mark Johnson, Mark Oben, what do you guys think of The Dictator? Are you a fan of the Sacha Baron Cohen films, I guess, as well?
Well, I liked Borat, and I liked Bruno quite a bit, too. So that would probably make me kind of excited for the film. But I don't know, maybe I'm feeling a little bit like fatigue at his sort of shtick. And so I'm a little bit less excited about this film. In the trailer, there's a part at the end of the trailer where he's running a race and he starts shooting people. That was kind of funny. Like, I thought that was enjoyable. But the fact that Megan Fox is in the movie is not a good sign, in my opinion. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, I did like his other films. It's just I'm a little bit like, okay. And then this little fiasco about whether or not he can attend the Academy Awards or not is ridiculous. Just like, I'm like, it's like the Academy Awards is not about you, okay, Sacha Baron Cohen. So it just feel like he uses every opportunity to promote himself. And it's a little bit like, okay, that's fine. But, you know, I mean, if the reviews are good, then I'll probably be more excited to go see it.
I think the Oscar thing, by the way, was a setup. I don't think that was ever a real situation. That's just my personal opinion. I think they were battling back and forth. I think it was
publicity.
Yeah, it was like an organized stunt.
So, do you think he going to attend?
Yeah. Now, this is why, because now he is attending in character as a presenter, from what I read last.
Yeah, I think I read that as well.
So I don't think the Academy would have said no, and then oh, okay. In the end, I think they would have stuck to their guns if it hadn't been a stunt to begin with. I think they just wanted some publicity for it.
Oh, so the Academy Awards did this.
I think it was between him and the Academy, putting the stunt together, to just generate some buzz.
I see.
But I might be wrong. That's just the way it looks like.
No, I'm sure you're right.
Yeah. But I am a fan. I was a huge fan of Dolly G Show.
Yes.
Back before he was making these movies. But and Borat's probably, I mean, if I had to say, maybe my favorite comedy of the last decade. Right up there with Royal Tenenbaums, probably.
Two movies that should be lumped together more often.
Right. Bruno, I wasn't as big a fan of, but I still laughed through most of it. So I would say that I am definitely looking forward to this one. And he's been good in other stuff. He's done smaller roles like
Sweeney
in
Todd.
Hugo or Sweeney Todd, right? He's one of those guys I think is really versatile. I think there's more to him than just the silly craziness. I think he's got some potential to, I mean, who would have said Tom Hanks would have been one of the best actors, of a decade after he was in stuff like Bosom Buddies.
Bachelor Party.
Right. And I think Sasha, I think he has that. Maybe Robin Williams is the actor to compare him to, where he's just silly and crazy, but he can. I have a feeling in the future we're going to see some kind of, dramatic performance from him. That's
if you were to view Hugo in a different way, I think you could already argue that. But
yeah, right.
But I completely agree with what you just said about Sacha Baron Cohen. The movie, the Dictator. As far as like Bruno and Borat goes, like I laughed at them. And I saw him the once, and that was kind of it for me. Like, I'm good. So I feel kind of the same way about this, where I'll probably, have a good time watching it, but I probably won't, have a desire to watch it again. But I'm still looking I'm very curious about what it is exactly, since it has a combination of a lot of actors and possibly real-world shenanigans going on. So that's where my main curiosity lies right now.
From the trailer, it looks like maybe it's less real-world shenanigans.
Yeah, that's certainly Borat.
It looks like
more scripted.
Movie.
Yeah. Looks pretty funny. I'm a big fan of Sacha Baron Cohen as well. The Ali G Show. I always think back to when he's texting everybody, telling them the batteries are dead, and they've got to self-connect to get the thing going in the movie. Anyway, yeah, I'm a big fan. I like a lot of his little shtick.
All right, so that's The Dictator, which comes out May 11th, 2012. The movie that will most likely upset the Avengers at the box office that weekend. Okay, next movie we have is Casa de mi Padre, which stars Gael Garcia Bernal and Diego Luna, and introducing Will Ferrell as a Mexican rancher. And who kind of involves themselves in Mexico with Mexico's most feared drug lord. And this is a Spanish film, an independent feature, with a young up-and-comer named Will Ferrell in one of the lead roles. So it's been tagged as the funniest movie you'll ever read. So with all that said, I've heard a lot about this movie for a while now. It's finally got a producer or like someone to distribute it. So, Abe, what are you thinking about Casa de mi Padre?
It looks awesomely retarded. And in that, I'm just saying, like, with the slow motion action sequences, with Will Ferrell shooting guns, you know, you see the shell casings come out really slow, terrible lines. It's gonna be great. I mean, I think that it almost reminds me of what was that Jack Black movie where
Nacho Libre,
but probably like more off the wall, a little bit more like retarded. But it looks pretty funny.
Right. That's actually exactly what I was going to say. It reminds me of like Nacho Libre meets Scarface or something. But I'm very – with Will Ferrell, it's very hit or miss for me and most of the time miss. I have a hard time with what I call stupid comedies where there's not much plot going on and it's just kind of slapstick. And I know you could probably say that about Bruno, but I think there was a lot more to Bruno than just a few laughs or whatnot. But I'm not even sure I'm going to see this one. I'll probably wait to see what people are saying and then go from there. I think the last movie he made I liked was Stranger Than Fiction, maybe. Yeah. It's been a while, so.
Well, I like the fact that Diego Luna and Gael Garcia Bernal are in it. That sort of lends it sort of an air of authenticity. But it kind of looks like a sketch from Saturday Night Live that they've expanded to feature length.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's not a good. Doesn't bode well for it. It's sort of making fun of like telenovelas, and I think telenovelas are funny because they're trying to be serious, and then they're funny because they're sort of not. This looks like we're really trying to be silly, and it looks a little bit like it's trying kind of hard. It also kind of reminds me of one of those trailers from the movie Grindhouse, like something you know, like Machete or whatever. But right. But anyway. Yeah, it doesn't look spectacular, but it might have some, you know, enough laughs in it to make it worthwhile.
I'm hoping this movie's more Machete than Nacho Libre. I really hate Nacho Libre a lot, mainly because I just don't care for Jared Hess's style of comedy. So I don't want it to be that, and I want it to be more ridiculous like Machete. But we'll see, I guess. I'm curious. And I know Will Ferrell's been trying. He's been trying to get this one out there for a long time now. I remember hearing about this. Like, Will Ferrell wants to make a subtitled comedy. So it's finally happened years later. So, yeah, that said, I'm pretty curious about it. And, the slow-motion action sequences involving him made me laugh. So. All right, well, Casa de mi Padre comes out in March 16th, a few weeks. I think that's the same week as 21 Jump Street, so who knows? Maybe we'll do a double episode about that one.
Jesus.
With current Oscar nominee Jonah Hill and current heartthrob Channing Tatum. but with all that said, let's move on to today's comedy review for Wanderlust.
You ready for your meeting?
Yep.
Knock him dead, all right? I'll call you later.
You know what I want to do? I want to take off that robe and...
Why are you not at work, George?
Oh, no, I got fired.
As soon as we can get back on our feet, we'll come back to New York. But right now, my brother's offering me a job, and Atlanta's the best place for us to be.
Ah! Hey, there he is! My homeless brother, where's your cardboard box? And Linda, my God!
Your body is redonkulous.
Rick, I think you're making everybody uncomfortable.
Oh, everybody knows what I mean.
Here you go, simple data entry.
You want me to enter this data?
Are you questioning me? Don't question me.
Are you serious?
Am I serious? You're fired. You're rehired. Consider that a warning shot.
Let's get the hell out of here.
All right, I cannot be in this car anymore.
Elysium Bed and Breakfast.
You looking for the B&B? There's another half mile. You can't miss it.
Leave?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's coming out!
He wants to make a suit out of our skin!
You guys okay? We'll take care of you. My name's Wayne, by the way. I'm a nudist.
Oh, yes, we noticed your penis earlier.
All right, so that was a little bit of the trailer for Wanderlust, the new film starring Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston from director David Wayne. And this film is about Rudd and Aniston playing George and Linda, a kind of New York yuppie-ish couple who are forced to leave New York because Paul Rudd, George doesn't get his the bonus or raise that he's been wanting, and because of a lack of funds, they have to move out of their micro loft and down to live with their brother-in-law, played by Ken Marino, but because he's such a dick, they kind of move away from that area and decide to spend time, or just basically shift their entire life over to Elysium, which is a commune that they spent a day at and had a ball with, and decide, maybe we should try this forever. Joining this commune, they meet a host of different weird alternative characters, including Justin Theroux as Seth, the somewhat leader character, and among many others who are all doing very different things, including a nudist winemaker. Lots of free love shenanigans start happening, and Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston try to adjust to this alternative lifestyle, but we'll see, you can see how far that goes. So, with all that said, let's start with Mark Hoban. What did you think of Wanderlust?
Okay, well, in a word, I did not like the film. I didn't like it, but it started out really well. I thought that Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston were kind of like two yuppie types, and they play sort of uptight really well. And they embody this combination of likable but still fussy enough that we can take delight when bad things happen to them. So it started out really good, and there was a funny, amusing bit about Jennifer Aniston plays Linda, and she's at the moment in the beginning of the film, she's a documentary filmmaker, and she's making this documentary about penguins, but it's also about how the wildlife isn't threatened, and she pitches it as like An Inconvenient Truth meets March of the Penguins, and I thought that was funny and kind of speaks to like how pitch meetings go and things like that. So it started out really well, and then you know things kind of fall apart for them, and then they end up in this community. But once they end up in the they go to the community the first time, and it's really like a pleasant experience for them. And then they leave, and everything up until then is good. They go to the brother's house, and he's such a jerk that they leave and decide to go back. When they go back to the community is where I think the film fell apart. And it just was just a bunch of skits for me, and really kind of childish, aimless, didn't really have much of a point. I feel like it almost felt like two different films. The beginning, which was really kind of a great setup, and then an ending where they just sort of aimlessly do one skit after another, and I didn't really find much of the humor very funny. So unfortunately, I would say I didn't care for the film.
I thought it was okay. I think there were a lot of funny parts, and I agree with Mark where it's pretty good in the early part, and then when they get to Elysium, I think the extended stay at Elysium past a certain time limit of the movie, I was like, wow, this is getting pretty old here, because nothing really new happens, I guess. I think that Ken Marino, man, that guy, like when he breaks that plate, I was like, this guy is really bad. Like, it's actually kind of really funny. Also, if you ever watch Party Down, it was he plays like this really like dumb like catering boss, but anyway, like, Ken Marino is actually a really funny guy. I like him a lot. In this role, it was kind of just—he was just being such a dick that you just really hate him. But aside from that, I think that Jennifer Aniston was okay in this. I think Paul Rudd is always being Paul Rudd. He's a great, comedic actor, and he really makes this. Like, I guess he sells this one pretty well. But again, the Elysium thing is cool. I think that there is like a stupid little way that they make the movie. Keep going. It's like a plot point where this is stupid, and then Justin Theroux kind of just being really weird. There's a lot of tension before, and then kind of just see that dissipate a little bit again. I think at a certain time it kind of just got a little bit cliched for me, but it was okay.
Yeah, Abe, I basically agree with what you had to say there. I think, and points that Mark made as well, I think the movie, I think it's quite funny, and funny enough for me to recommend it overall, just because when I was going back over my thoughts on the movie to try and write about it, it kept making me laugh. And I was thinking about a lot of the things that did make me appreciate the movie. I went like half a star higher because I'm like, you know what, this movie did make me laugh genuinely and, you know, loud for numerous parts. But yeah, it does rely on more sketchish kind of based humor than it does like having a cohesive plot. And then when the plot does kick in, it feels very perfunctory. It doesn't really feel like anything out of the ordinary interesting is happening. Like, I don't really care about George and Linda's relationship problems, and I don't having conflict involving the state of Elysium is kind of I don't really care about this. But there are a lot of really funny people with this film, and I did laugh quite a bit at what they're doing, even if it is essentially a movie that involves having various skits coming into play over and over again. I laughed at those skits. I had a good time watching the movie. Justin Theroux in particular made me laugh a lot throughout this movie, everything he was doing. And it makes me wonder, because he's been in a lot of movies and he's done a lot of different things. Like, he's also a screenwriter too, but he's done a lot of different roles. Like, he's been in a couple David Lynch movies. He was in American Psycho, and he's in like these movies. He knows how to do a lot of different things, and it's weird to me that he hasn't broken out as a bigger star compared to a lot of other people that have. So.
Well, I see your point, but I kind of value the sleeping pill and the blackberry and the latte.
You know, you can really get trapped in that web of beepers and Zenith televisions and Walkmans and Discmans and floppy disks and zip drives, laser discs, answering machines, and Nintendo Power Glove.
Wow, you know so much about technology.
But Mark, about the pitch meeting, I thought that was like a really funny scene where Jennifer Aniston is basically trying to go off the rails because she's pretty upset, and then they're like, "Could you really do that?"
Yes. Yeah. No, that's
how it'd sell. And I was like, I don't know if it's like making a jab at HBO for making these like overly dramatic and overly like sad things or you know, things.
The woman is like, I think you're kidding, but if you're not, could you pitch that? Like, that whole scene was brilliant. I mean, I really felt like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a great film. I mean, I was really excited.
And then I also want to point out that the Mad TV comedian who's also in that scene, he was pretty funny too. I forget his name, but he's the guy that agrees with everything. And then he's like, what I think she's trying to say is, and he just says it verbatim. And it's just like, but that was a great pitch scene.
Yeah, it's him and one of the guys at Elysium who plays Rodney. They're on the new Comedy Central show, Key and Peele.
Oh,
together.
Cool.
So I was like, oh, these two guys are both in this movie. That's Abe, you mentioned Ken Marino, who I really think is really fun. He also co-wrote the film with David Wayne, but yeah.
Did he? I didn't know.
Yeah, I can actually, regardless, like Ken Marino, he was really funny, but I really liked his wife, because the character of the wife played by Michaela Watkins. Like,
so
there was
weird.
A lot of really funny stuff. Like, I think that family could have like their own short film spinoff. Like, they're just off the walls in this movie.
Well, and I think she represented what the audience was feeling, like, because this Ken Marino character is such a jerk.
Yeah. The son was the part about the son.
That was an amazing
great
joke.
He's only
like
on
one
like
scene,
10
but it was
seconds.
Perfect. It was exactly what you'd expect. Like, Paul Rudd is a fool in this movie, by the way, too. Like he has two scenes where they just let him go, basically. And there's a lot where you can either tolerate that or you can't. And really, it did a thing where, like, South Park does, where you just kind of have a joke, and it goes on, and it stops being funny, but then it kind of gets to be funny again, and that's where I kind of landed with it.
That scene where...
The mirror scene or the scene after it?
Scene in the mirror, where he's basically trying to psych himself.
I purposely, you know, did not describe it to not spoil it.
Yeah. No, I think it's basically just an ad-lib scene. So, I mean, I don't think it's possible to spoil it. I couldn't do it justice. The scene wasn't even funny in the first second. I think they should have just taken it out. And then the fact that it goes on for like 5 minutes was just, I mean, it was one of the most, I respect Paul Rudd. And it was probably, it was almost a scene like when somebody, like that scene in Fame where Irene Cara has to take her clothes off. And you're like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing.
Sad, don't you?
It's so sad. And I was looking at Paul Rudd like, just stop, please. This is embarrassing. It was bad. I mean, It was really bad,
I was
actually.
A lot with my audience.
I read a review actually that said they thought that was their favorite scene of the film. So, but yeah, I thought it was bad.
It seems that we can't like play a clip from that because it's so like foul. But
I'd have to edit a lot of that out.
What about Jennifer Aniston in this movie?
I thought she was okay. I thought she was serviceable. I liked her better in Horrible Bosses.
Yes,
where she's not playing a Jennifer Aniston character. Yeah.
You know, not that same character that you see all the time. I mean, you've seen Office Space, it's kind of like the same kind of role.
Incredible night.
Truly.
Do you take credit cards?
No.
We all decided that you paid us last night with your friendship and honesty and your stories.
So kind.
Do we get change back?
And you know what? If we didn't need the money so badly, we would insist.
Mm. Just remember, money buys nothing.
Yep. Mm. Well, nothing important. Right?
No. Money literally buys nothing.
I think you mean metaphorically.
No, literally, nothing.
Literally, money buys most things.
No, nothing. Right? Are you saying that?
I'm saying that literally,
I'm saying literally money buys nothing. I don't know what
it buys nothing.
You're right. Money pays for nothing.
That's right.
But not literally.
Honey.
She has a way that she reacts to people's, like someone make a statement and she'll make a sort of like a puzzled face, or she has a reaction shot that is the same in every single thing she does. And she does it in Friends. She does it in, she acts the same. I mean, she has absolutely no range. And I mean, she's fine. She's adequate for the part, and she's supposed to be, she's moderately likable. But at the same time, like I was saying earlier, you sort of like it when bad things happen to her. So it's she's straddling the line between the right kind of a character.
Yeah.
But she has no range.
I agree with. I don't really care for Jennifer Aniston that much in movies, and because she's boring to me every time.
She could never play like a person from another country or do an accent. She's just an American. She's an American girl from LA.
I thought about that. But that's very
she
true.
Can't, she
I
cannot
could,
do
I
it.
I couldn't see her.
I did love her in The Leprechaun. I'll say that.
More horror movies.
Did you guys see? Was it The Good Girl where she's getting some critical acclaim?
I saw The Good Girl.
Right.
I didn't see it.
She's good in that movie. That's...
If she ever gave a what you'd call a performance, yeah. That would be it.
Well, even Horrible Bosses, she gives like a performance. She's trying.
It's right. A little bit more off.
It's still
off
giving a performance.
So. Tilt, yeah.
And she's a brunette in that movie. So. That's method acting, I believe. That's what they call it.
You know what I was surprised about? You're right, Aaron. Malin Ackerman does not take off her shirt. Which I was like, wow, this is strange. But okay.
I'd like to give credit to Malin Ackerman for like how she plays this. Like, it could be misconstrued as very easy to play the role that she's playing, but I think there's a lot of kind of nuance to playing that kind of character where she's basically a sexpot, but like not outright saying it, where she's playing hot, but like kind of aloof to it. It's not like a huge role, especially when you have all these other crazy characters, such as Joe Latruglio as a nudist winemaker who's writing his great novel. But I liked her in this movie too. Anything else about Wanderlust before we get to our review or our rating it?
Oh, no, I think I'm pretty psyched about the Oscars. I think we should go into that.
Right. Yeah.
Then let's get to our rating then. Each week on Out Now, we try to rate the movies that we see based on when you should go and see them. And that scale kind of goes from IMAX to theater, Dollar Theater, Netflix, HBO, TV, or just kind of forget about it. So, Mark, on that scale, where would you put it?
I will put HBO. Yeah, I think it's definitely not something you need to see in the theater.
Abe?
I'd say Netflix.
All right. I'd say Dollar Theater would be fine for me. You catch it. You're like, oh, Wanderlust is playing. I'll go see it for $3. Yeah. All right. So let's move on then, and let's move to our box office results. And each week we go over the box office totals and find out if our previous week's predictions were anywhere near what they should be. Abe tends to be a pro at this game, so let's see what happened. Abe, do you remember what you predicted last week?
I think I said fourth with $9 million.
Alan Aguilera said fifth with $7 million. Jordan said third with $11 million. I said second with $14 million. I'm the big loser this week. Alan's a lot closer. Wanderlust came in at 8th place with $6 million. Act of Valor proved to be quite the film to beat with 1st place with $24 million, followed by Tyler Perry's Good Deeds, $16 million. Journey 2 holding strong at 3rd place, beating out Safe House and The Vow, which were number 1 and 2 for the past 2 weeks. And then Ghost Rider is still making money. Good for Ghost Rider.
How much did Ghost Rider drop?
Had it drop 60%, which is 60%? Average, really. If anything, you'd think it'd be sharper, but it didn't. So there you go. And yeah, Wanderlust did beat Gone with Amanda Seyfried. So.
Yay.
And also Secret of Ariarte is at 10th place, and I just saw that movie, and I think it's really good. That's a strong film from Studio Ghibli. It's not like going to be one of their classics like, you know, Spirited Away or Totoro or Princess Mononoke. But it's a really solid film for all ages. I would recommend Secret World of Ariarte. And, yeah, that's box office stuff. Well, let's move on a little bit to our retro reviews. You know what, Abe? We call these retro reviews every week. We don't really review these movies that are retro. We just got to mention them. So I want to propose a new title. A new title for this segment. I have one in mind right here.
Drum roll, please. What's it seem like? I like it.
What's it seem like? Okay. So in our segment of What's It Seem Like, we discuss a couple of films that relate in some way to the main feature of the week. So with that, Abe, any movies come to mind that, you know, seemed like Wanderlust?
In terms of general categories, any Paul Rudd movie and any Judd Apatow movie.
All right. Mark?
Well, yeah, I'm sort of piggybacking on that thought, but I'll be a little more specific. I'll say Our Idiot Brother, because he played a hippie in that film, and I don't know what her name is, but there was one woman that was actually in Wanderlust that is also in Our Idiot Brother. I wish I could think of her name. She played the woman that at the commune in Our Idiot Brother. I can't think of her name. Catherine Hahn. Thank you. So she was in both films, and it also had to do with a little bit with hippies, and so does Wanderlust. So I thought of that.
Yeah, I thought of David Wayne's previous films, Role Models, Wet Hot American Summer, and The State, or The State's the TV series, the 10 is the movie, The State's the MTV sketch series there's a lot of people at The State in this movie, actually, that are all in here. And then Martha Marcy Bay Marlene came to mind, too. I was thinking.
I thought about that.
Right, because Justin Thoreau is a little bit like the
John Hawks,
the guy. Yeah,
I just thought of it just like, wow, I could make a great double feature out of watching Wanderlust and Martha Marcy Bay Marley.
It would lighten the mood, that's for sure.
All right, so that's a little What's It Seem Like, and we're gonna move on now to our Oscar predictions. And, okay, so we're going to go through all 24 categories of the Oscars and predict what we want to see win here. And in addition to predicting what we think will win, we're also going to make some predictions, if we can, about what we'd want to win for this category, which doesn't necessarily need to be any of the nominees. I stress that enough. So if you guys have an answer to these questions that you want to suggest as an alternative to any of the nominees, if it isn't one of the nominees, if it is, then, you know, go for it. Then, you know, feel free to shout it out. We all got this. I'm going to go through them backwards as well. I'm not going to do the big ones first. I'll start small. Okay.
Way to build suspense.
Exactly. I know.
Okay, here we go. First category, best short film, live action. Pentecost, Raju, The Shore, Time Freak, and Tuba Atlantic. Start with Mark Johnson. Why not?
Well, I didn't see any of the shorts, so I don't know what I want to win, but I predicted The Shore to win.
The Shore. Hoban?
This is one of the rare opportunities where I actually did get to see all the films, and nice. I'm going to go with a little bit more my personal choice, but I'm going to pick Raju. And this film, it could be expanded to a feature-length movie. It was really quite emotionally affecting, and it was only, I forget what, 15, 20 minutes, I think it was 30 minutes, but it was really impressive. Although The Shore is there, you know, actually this is a strong category. These are all really pretty good films.
I agree. I actually also saw all the short films. So I also predict Raju as well. Actually, that's where my answer lies.
I'm predicting, Pentecost. Okay.
That's funny.
I saw the trailers.
You saw the trailers for the short films.
Yeah, for the short films. I was like, Pentecost looks like it could be like a fun but serious thing.
All right, here we go. Next category. Best short film animated. Sunday, The Fantastic Flying Books of Mr. Morris Lessmore, La Luna, A Morning Stroll, Wildlife. Abe?
I'm going to go with La Luna, and that's probably just because of Pixar, but I think that they were teasing it ahead of some other Pixar film in the past.
It's coming up in front of Brave.
In front of Brave, oh. But I think that I've seen like a minute of it. It looks pretty good.
Mark Hoban.
I'll pick The Fantastic Flying Books of Mr. Morris Lessmore.
Johnson?
Yeah, actually I was wrong. I did see one of the shorts, and that was The Fantastic Flying Books, and I loved it, so I went with that one.
I also go with The Fantastic Flying Books of Mr. Morris Lessmore. However, I'd want to win A Morning Stroll. That movie is so weird. No one's really going to see these movies, really, so it doesn't apply too much, but I'm just throwing it out there that I really liked A Morning Stroll the most out of these. And La Luna Has Pixar ever won a best short film animated Oscar?
Short?
Yeah, but it's been a while. It's been like since 2002.
Yeah, I recall. Yeah, they don't.
They're on a long.
They don't tend to win these categories. Yeah. Now, what's funny about the Fantastic Flying Books of Mr. Boris Lesmore, I kind of think it's Oscar bait. As weird it is to say best short film animated Oscar baity, but I really think it is very Oscar baity. Watching this movie is like this one. It seems very obvious to me, but it's such a mild rant that I don't really care that much. All right, let's move on. Best documentary short subject. Oh, this is a long one. The Barber of Birmingham, Foot Soldier of the Civil Rights Movement. God is the Bigger Elvis. Incident in New Baghdad. Saving Face or the Tsunami in Cherry Blossom. Mark Johnson.
I was between God is the Bigger Elvis and Saving Face, and in the end went with Saving Face.
All right. Abe.
I'm going to go with what Mark Johnson said, because I think that he's seen these films.
Yes, no, I haven't.
Oh. No. Then in that case, I'd go with the Tsunami and the Cherry Blossom.
Okay. There you go.
Got a competition. Oh, man, the prizes you guys are not going to get for calling these friends. Hoban?
I went with the Tsunami and the Cherry Blossom.
Okay, so, yeah, I'm with Saving Face, so we're going to – This is almost the toughest category for me. And I'm sure everyone's really riveted by these three. So let's move on to the bigger ones now. Best documentary feature. Hell and Back Again. If a Tree Falls, a Story of Earth, Liberation Front. Paradise Lost 3, Purgatory. Pina, or Undefeated. Abe?
I'm going to go with Hell and Back Again. I think I think Roger Ebert has shouted that out. So I'll go with that.
Mark Johnson.
I saw all of these except Undefeated, and Hell and Back Again was probably my favorite, but I ended up going with Undefeated just for the fact that it was backed by the Weinsteins.
Ooh, damn, that's good. Hoban?
I'm going to go with Undefeated.
Okay.
Uplifting.
I'm with Paradise Lost 3 Purgatory, so we'll see. This is a weird category, documentaries, too. Yeah,
it really could go to any one of the five on this one.
All right. Best achievement in visual effects. We have Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, Hugo, Real Steel, Rise of the Planet of the Apes of the Rise of the Planets, Transformers, Dark Side of the Moon, Album Side 2. That's it. Okay, all those three. Four, five. Five. That's rare. We don't have five nominees that often in this category. It's usually like
three. We will from now on, though. They change.
Oh, it's always
going to
be five? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Abe, who are you picking in this one?
This one's actually kind of tough. I'm going to go with Hugo, but I'm kind of iffy on Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It's like, you know, they have some pretty good visual effects, but I'm going to go with Hugo.
Mark Hoban.
I'd like to redub this the Andy Serkis Award, and I'm giving it to Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
I am right there with you. Johnson?
Yeah, I think Hugo's a good pick, but I also went with Rise of the Planet of the Apes for Andy Serkis factor, and they seem to like their motion capture performances in that category.
Okay. Trying to think of does anyone have one that they'd want to win this category? Rise?
Rise.
Yeah, I like Rise.
This one was a tough one for me. Like, I think I want Rise to win as much as I think it will win, but these are some good, strong... Like, I really like the Real Steel special effects. I thought in terms of scale, I mean, Transformers would obviously kind of... I mean, say what you will about those movies. It does a lot with what it's created visually, but the Real Steel robots had more personality, which is why I really like the robots in those movies compared to Transformers. But, yeah, it's still Rise. Yeah. All right. Okay, here we go. Best achievement in sound editing. Drive. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Hugo. Transformers Dark of the Moon, War Jessica Parker. War Horse, sorry. I was a type on my computer. Abe?
I went with War Horse.
Hoban?
Hugo?
Mark Johnson?
This is, to me, this is the hardest category in the whole field.
It's a tough one, yeah.
But I went with War Horse.
Yeah, I also went with War Horse, but I have...
I would like Drive to win it, simply
it needs
because...
to win something.
One nomination, but that's probably not going to happen.
Okay, next up we have Best Achievement in Sound Mixing. Ask any of us what we think the difference between these two categories are. We'll probably give you some crickets first. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Kicks Fire with Hornet's Nests, Hugo, Moneyball, Transformer Dark of the Moon Side 1, Track 1, War Horse, Mark Hoban.
Hugo again.
Johnson?
I went with a split with the sounds. I went with Hugo for mixing.
I did as well. Abe?
Mixing, I don't even know what that means. But I'm going to stick with Warhorse.
Okay. Again, this could go either way. Between these two, actually. It's surprising. It's surprising how, like, it's either one or the other. Like, none of the other ones apparently had a chance in our eyes. But we'll see.
Does anyone know what the history, like, does the same movie usually win both of these awards,
actually,
or does it often?
No. Generally, I believe sound mixing generally, like, if a musical's nominated, sound mixing generally goes to the musical film. Like, I remember, Dreamgirls, I think, was nominated for sound mixing, and whatever giant summer blockbuster was up for sound editing, and I correctly predicted that Dreamgirls won sound mixing, so I was pretty...
Yes, Chicago, Dreamgirls, and Ray are all previous winners in mixing. It's kind of all over the board with mixing because those films win, but then other bigger ones like King Kong and Inception have won, and then some more, even Slumdog Millionaire, which is kind of weird, but that also won sound mixing. Whereas editing kind of tends to lean more towards the big booming. That's more of the King Kong, Lord of the Rings, Dark Knight, Hurt Locker, those movies. War movies especially, it seems, tend to win sound editing. Even Pearl Harbor won that Oscar before.
Okay, here we go. Best I think we could all say this at the same time. Best Achievement in Music Written for a Motion Picture, Original Song, The Muppets, Man or Muppet, Rio, Real and Rio, Johnson, Hope, and Abe, Muppets.
Muppets.
Man or Muppet.
Let's hope.
Yeah, for real. Jesse Eisenberg with an Oscar under... No.
Well, he wouldn't win.
Yeah, he wouldn't win.
Sergio Mendes would, though. He's part of the, he wrote the music.
I want to see a Flight of the Conchords get on stage and have an Oscar in his hand. That'll be Best Achievement in Music Written for Motion Picture, Original Score, Adventures in Tintin, John Williams, The Artist. I can't even read that name. I was god 5 seconds into that one. Ludovic Borsay, Hugo by Howard Shore, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Alberto Iglesias, War Horse, John Williams. Double threat. Abe?
Ooh. I just kind of randomly chose. I haven't seen The Artist. I know, sacrilegious. But I'll go with The Adventures of Tintin. But what I would want to win is Drive, Cliff Martinez. That elevator, like the wrong floor track, man, I still can play it in my head. It's a great track.
Hobbit?
I picked The Artist. I mean, the whole film is a score. So.
I'm right there with you. Johnson?
Yeah, I picked The Artist as well. My personal pick, what I would like to have seen one was Hannah.
Yeah, that's mine too. Yes.
Or Hugo. I like Hugo.
Hugo score's nice. I listen to it quite a bit. I have the score now. It's nice. The Drive score I've listened to a lot recently, actually, because I watched Drive again not too long ago, and it's like, damn, the score's really good. But Hanno's. I've listened to that the most, I think, this year while writing.
I thought John Williams' score in War Horse was pretty good too. It was one of the things about the film I liked the most.
All five nominees here, I like. Tintin's probably the one I would sub out something like either Dragon Tattoo.
That's
or
the
Hannah.
One that sticks out. Yeah, it's like that got both John Williams' scores got nominated. I didn't see that coming.
I like
the Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy score too. Actually, I see that in there because it has a kind of a 70s retro vibe to it that I kind of especially like in the it was very noticeable in the opening title sequence of that movie. It was like I like where this music's kind of going. All right, Best Achievement in Makeup: Albert Nobbs, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 of 8, or 1 or 2, The Iron Lady, and that's it. Those three. Mark Johnson?
Their history seems to go toward Harry Potter here, but I'm going to go with Iron Lady.
I also went with Iron Lady. Margaret equals Meryl. I think that's the kind of logic I'm going with. Mark Hoban?
Yeah, I went with Iron Lady. Although I struggled with this, even though there's only three categories or three options, I kind of struggled between Harry Potter and Iron Lady, but I ultimately went with Iron Lady.
Abe?
I want the Iron Lady. If anything, I think that, or if Harry were to win anything, maybe it'd be this one, just to give him an Oscar. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Best achievement in costume design. We have Anonymous, The Artist, Hugo, Jane Eyre, or the King's Speech spinoff by Madonna W.E. Mark Johnson.
Yeah, along with sound editing, I think this was the hardest one to predict. Usually they like their flashier, bigger costumes like Anonymous or Jane Eyre, but I went with The Artist because I think this is one of the ones that it gets in a semi-sweep. I don't think it's going to dominate, but I think it'll take quite a few, so I think it starts here.
Mark Hoban?
I went with Hugo, but I agree that I think this category could go to any one of these five, and I would not be shocked. But right. Hugo is where I ended up
picking. I also went with Hugo, and I went with that over The Artist simply because it's in color. I think that might have a difference. Exactly. That might make the difference for why one goes over the other. But I mean, I feel like if The Artist starts, you know, taking technical awards early, it's probably going to sweep every award at that point. I'll probably be rushing to change my polls, but we'll see. Abe?
I went with The Artist.
All right. Best achievement in art direction. The Artist, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, or War Horse. Abe?
I'm all over the place. I went with Hugo in this one.
I also went with Hugo. Mark Hoban?
Yeah, I think Hugo was a stunning-looking film, and so I went with Hugo.
Mark Johnson?
Yeah, this seems to be one of the locks of the night, so I also went with Hugo. Okay.
Let's see. Best achievement in editing. We have The Artist, The Descendants, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Hugo, and Moneyball. Mark Johnson?
The Best Picture-winning film tends to win this award, so I went with The Artist, but I think it'll be a close race with that and Hugo.
Hugo, I mean, Thelma Schoonmaker's a 7-time winner. She's a threat in these categories, but I also went with The Artist. Mark Hoban?
The Artist.
Abe?
The Artist.
Okay. In terms of what I'd want to win, I'd actually say The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and I know Adam Gentry would agree with me because that movie flew by to me because of the editing. So, when I watched that movie twice, it was like, this movie just feels really well paced, and I credit that a lot to how the editing's going for a 2-hour and 40-minute movie. But that's me, so that probably won't win, but we'll see. Probably The Artist. Okay, best achievement in cinematography. A lot of beautiful films in this category. We have The Artist, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Hugo, The Tree of Life, and War Horse. Abe?
Well, The Tree of Life.
Mark Johnson?
This better be The Tree of Life, or I'm going to be pretty pissed off. But but I think The Artist is a real threat here. But I did go with The Tree of Life.
Mark Hoban?
Yeah, I thought I was being, you know, different, but I picked The Tree of Life also.
Yeah, well, let's see. Emmanuel Lubezki has never won an Oscar, I believe, right? Is that correct, Mark?
I don't think so.
Pretty sure he has not. Yeah.
He lost for Children of Men a few years ago when he should have won there as well.
And I think he was nominated for. Was he nominated for the? Did he do the New World too?
He might have because he works with. He might have worked with Malik on that. Yeah.
See, now I'm looking. I'm going to look this up really quick because I'm just curious. Yeah, he's a 5-time nominee, but has never won.
That's crap.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we're all about Tree of Life here. Okay. Then next up we have Best Foreign Language Film of the Year, Bullhead from Belgium, Footnote from Israel, In Darkness from Poland, Monsieur Lazare from Canada, and A Separation from Iran. So, Mark Johnson, where would you put yours there?
Well, there seems to be an upset here every single year, but I went with A Separation anyway.
I did too. Mark Hoban?
A Separation.
Okay. Abe?
Separation.
All right. Now, I know three of us have seen A Separation, and yeah, we all really like this movie a lot, but there always seems to be an upset in the foreign language film.
Has anyone seen any of the other films?
I was going to see In Darkness, but then I like saw some negative reviews for it. I was like, I don't really feel like sitting through a depressing 2.5-hour Holocaust drama right now, so I'm not going to, so I didn't go and check it out. And the other ones aren't even like out anywhere yet, right? Those ones.
Right. I'm surprised we got A Separation here in Cleveland. We usually It usually is like May before we get the foreign language films. So that's the only one I've seen.
All right, so next up we have Best Animated Feature Film of the Year. We have A Cat in Paris, Chico and Rita, Kung Fu Panda 2, Puss in Boots, and Rango. I'm with Rango all the way. Anyone that knows me could have guessed that. Abe?
Or I went with Chico and Rita. I'd rather see Kung Fu Panda win just because I liked it more. But Chico and Rita, apparently, it's been getting some good reviews.
Okay. Johnson?
You said you saw Chico and Rita?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Because, that one looks to me... the only one of the four five I've seen... Well, actually, I saw Rango and Kung Fu Panda, too. But Chico and Rita just looks incredible. I didn't get to see it, though. So Rango seems to be the favorite here, so...
Hoban?
Well, when these nominations came out, I actually sought out Chico and Rita and A Cat in Paris. And they're good, but they're not even close to Rango. I mean, Rango was one of my favorite films of the whole year. Yep. So,
okay, here we go. Best Writing Screenplay based on a material previously produced or published. And we have The Descendants, Hugo, The Ides of March, Moneyball, and Tinker, Tailor, Martha, Marcy, Soldier, Spy, Marlene. Abe?
I went with The Descendants.
Because you want to see Dean Pelton win. I get it.
Yeah, exactly.
I also went with The Descendants. Mark Hoban?
I went with The Descendants, although I would love for Moneyball to win this award, but yeah, The Descendants.
Yeah, I'm the same as Hoban. I went with Descendants, root for Moneyball.
I'd love to see Hugo win this award. It's not going to, but I'd like to see that, because I've read the book now, and I'm like, this book's really good, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Awesome.
It's like it's a book and like a picture book and a comic and like it's all these different books in one. It's like really awesome. Okay, best screenplay written directly for the screen. The Artist from Michelle Hazanavicius. Bridesmaids from Kristen Wiig and Annie Mobolo. Margin Call from J.C. Chandor. Midnight in Paris from Woody Allen. A Separation from Asghar Farhadi. Abe?
I'm with The Artist, but I'd like to see Kristen Wiig win for Bridesmaids.
Mark Hoban?
Midnight in Paris.
I'm also with Midnight in Paris. Mark Johnson?
Same here, Midnight in Paris.
Okay. I'd want Midnight in Paris to win as well, and I'm going to be annoyed if The Artist sweeps everything and gets screenplay for a silent movie. That's just me. Okay.
No, they've got to write stuff like, and then he walks.
I mean, there's an actual screenplay for the movie, and there, you know, people do speak in that movie in terms of they are talking, you just don't hear them, but still. Okay, best achievement in direction. Woody Allen for Midnight in Paris, Michelle Hazanavicius for The Artist, Terrence Malick for The Tree of Life, Alexander Payne for The Descendants, Martin Scorsese for Hugo. Abe?
I went with Woody Allen, Midnight in Paris. I mean, no, I'm sorry. Oh, that's who I'd want to win. Director Hazanavicius.
Michelle Hazanavicius, okay. Mark? Hoban, sorry.
Michelle Hazanavicius.
Okay, Johnson?
Yeah, I went with Hazanavicius too, but I'd love to see either Scorsese or Malick win it.
Yeah, I also went for Hazanavicius, but yes, I'd really love to see Martin Scorsese pick one up for Hugo. That's where I'd wish that would happen. It'd be very, very interesting to see if Terrence Malick won for directing. That's like not gonna happen, but it's like, wow, that might happen. Okay.
Right.
Okay, best performance by an actress in a supporting role. Berenice Bejo for The Artist. Jessica Chastain for The Help out of her 8 movies, Melissa McCarthy for Bridesmaids, and Janet McTeer for Albert Nobbs, and Octavia Spencer for The Help. Abe?
I went with Octavia Spencer. But it'd be cool to see Melissa McCarthy win.
Mark Johnson?
Yeah, I'd be between Chastain and Spencer if I had a vote, but I think Spencer is going to win.
And Mark Hoban?
Octavia Spencer is probably going to win this.
Do you want to win for this category?
You know, this is a really kind of a weird choice, but I might actually pick Melissa McCarthy. I thought she was really funny in that film. She kind of reminded me a little bit of like the Marissa Tomei factor in My Cousin Vinny. She just was sort of like she just really made me laugh.
All right. Best performance by an actor in a supporting role. Kenneth Branagh for My Week with Marilyn, Jonah Hill for Moneyball, Nick Nolte for Warrior, Christopher Plummer for Beginners, and Max von Sydow for Extremely Loud and Incredibly Oscar Bait. Mark Hoban?
Christopher Plummer, I think, is going to win this.
Abe?
Yeah, Christopher Plummer all the way.
Johnson?
I have Plummer as well. If of the five nominated, I'm rooting for Plummer, but Brad Pitt for The Tree of Life would have been my pick to win if you were on there.
Yeah, from this category, I would want Nick Nolte to win. Actually, that's where I'd kind of go. I'm going with Christopher Plummer, and I'd go for Albert Brooks and Drive if things were different.
Aaron, I totally agree with you. I really like Nick Nolte a lot in Warrior, and also just maybe it was a little bit of a sentimental choice, but he's in his life, he's had some problems in real life, and I just feel like he really cleaned himself up in this film, and he almost was playing himself a little bit. I really found it to be a good performance and a sentimental favorite.
Yeah,
so.
I think he's very strong.
I'm actually more emotionally connected to Nick Nolte winning this award personally than Christopher Plummer, but Christopher Plummer seems to be the sentimental choice. So,
Abe just went with it because he's also a 72-year-old gay man who just recently came out. But
it's the story of my life. What can I say?
What I can say about Christopher Plummer, because I really do like that performance, I'm very happy that if he wins an Oscar tonight, that he wins the Oscar tonight. But what I really like about the performance is that he is playing an aged gay character that dies in a film. I mean, that's not a spoiler. He's going to die. In any other movie, that would seem like Oscar bait, like automatically. It's like he's playing a character with cancer who's gay. Give me Oscar now. But it feels very grounded in this movie. So kudos for that performance.
It's a subtle performance.
It's much less over the top or like completely like just like going for the award kind of performance that you kind of expect from just that broad description of it. So I do really like that Christopher Plummer performance. So
I hope he prepares a really good speech, because he's been acting for a few years.
He's just gonna start singing songs from
Sound of Music. Pick
up a guitar and start singing.
I believe he hates that performance. Actually, I think he said that. He really hates his role in that movie, or like he did. That's not one of his favorites. I'm pretty sure I've heard him say that.
Then he's stupid, because Sound of Music is awesome and he's great in that. That's one of the main reasons I'm rooting for him is Captain Von Trapp.
Yeah.
So. I'm curious, who did he lose to that year?
He didn't even get nominated for that. Yeah. The first time he was ever nominated for was that thing with Helen Mirren. Can't even think of the name of it. Leo Tolstoy. I can't even think of the name of it, but I mean, I saw it and I can't think of it.
Yeah, I can't believe he was for The Insider.
Yes, he could have been nominated for that.
He's a little over the top. The Last Station was the...
The Last Station, that's it.
Okay. Best performance by an actress in a leading role. Glenn Close for Albert Nobbs. Viola Davis for The Help. Rooney Mara for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Meryl Streep for The Iron Lady. Michelle Williams for My Week with Marilyn. Abe?
Definitely. That's a pretty strong category. I went with Viola Davis. It would have been cool to see Hannah.
Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan. But that's just, some odd, weird fantasy world.
Mark Hoban.
So I'm picking Viola Davis, but actually, personally, I really would love to see Meryl Streep win this award. And the reason is I really feel like that role in anyone else's hands would have been like a caricature and couldn't have been handled with the talent that Meryl Streep brought to it. So I thought it was an extraordinary performance, even though the film is seriously, seriously flawed. But Meryl Streep's performance really made it for me. But Viola Davis is my pick to win it.
Mark Johnson?
Yeah, I think either way, this is going to be probably the most emotional moment of the night, because Viola's been given the best speeches all season. And Meryl's gone, 29 years without a win. So I think either way, this is going to be an incredible moment. But I went with Viola.
All right. I also went with Viola Davis, who I think gives a very strong performance. So I'll be happy to see her win tonight for The Help if she does.
Me too.
In the ideal world, I made no secret about my love for the performances to Take Shelter, and I'd really love to see Jessica Chastain have been nominated for this category. I also would really like to see Elizabeth Olsen for Martha Marcy Marlene nominated over Rooney Mara in Girl with Dragon Tattoo.
Those are both good choices, and I have two more. I really like Charlize Theron.
And Young Adult, yeah.
Young Adult.
And then, what's the name? We need to talk about
Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, Tilda Swinton.
Yeah. That was also an extraordinary performance. There's a lot of performances that could have gone into this category.
and everyone that you're naming is a great performance, but all five of these are great as well. So it really would be hard to bump any out.
This became a very strong category. Like beforehand, it didn't seem as strong as it ended up being for actresses this year. So I'm pretty happy with
It's an interesting year because none of the movies, other than The Help, it wasn't really a year of movies for women. But as far as performances go, I think this is a stronger field than the men.
And Bridesmaids, that had.
Yeah, I mean, true.
It was a comedy, but.
Yeah. As far as best picture contenders, down to just one, really. And Viola is the only one of the five nominated whose film is up for best picture as well.
Okay, so next up we have best performance by an actor in a leading role, and we have Damien Bashir for A Better Life, George Clooney for The Descendants, John Dujardin for The Artist, Gary Oldman for Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, and Brad Pitt for Moneyball. Abe?
I went with Dujardin, but again, it would be fantastic if Brad Pitt won for Moneyball.
Mark Hoban?
I totally agree with you, Abe. I think Jean Dujardin will win it, and he does put in a good performance, and even since he's done the film, he's been very charming in the public eye.
He's learned English, but, essentially, since then. Like, he very little English before The Artist took off, and as he's been doing all these interviews and stuff, he's very much kind of learned the language so he can speak it.
You sent me that clip of Jean Dujardin auditioning for like all the evil parts. That was
Let me put that in the show notes right now, actually.
That was a funny link you sent me. And then he was also in a little clip in Saturday Night Live with this little dancing French thing. So he seems to be very charming. However, I would love to see Brad Pitt win this role. I thought he was phenomenal in Moneyball.
Mark Johnson?
Yeah. It's interesting how many people are rooting for Brad Pitt. I wonder if that spills over to the actual voters. Because I, too, am rooting for Pitt to win. I'd be okay with Clooney winning. I'd be happy to see him win. But I'd also pick Jean Dujardin just because I think he's the best part of The Artist. And if that's their favorite movie, then I think he'll get rewarded for it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys with Jean Dujardin. This is a strong category, too. I really like Clooney in The Descendants. I think it's one of his best performances that he's given in a film. So like, it's between these two, I think. So I mean, I think it's going to be Jean Dujardin, but I wouldn't be upset at all by Clooney winning. And Brad Pitt's very good in Moneyball. I agree with that. And Gary Oldman, I think he just wins Oscars every year, but that never happens. So I'm just happy to see that he's around here. Yeah.
Mark, is this the first time that Gary was nominated?
Yeah, this is Gary's first nomination.
That's a tragedy right there. But
look at Christopher Plummer. He's 72 years old. So.
Yeah, sometimes it's interesting too because sometimes it's just some kind of tragic miss, and sometimes it's just they've given great performance just in a really crowded year. So like this list of five is great, but then look at the few that missed. You got Fassbender missed for Shame. You have Woody Harrelson missed for Rampart.
Michael Shannon missed for
Take Shelter. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, there's that kind of stuff happens too along the way. It's not always the Oscar misses.
All good choices.
Right. And all five of these are good choices. I mean, if you could bump Bashir for any one of those three, but Bashir was really good. So it's it's one of those things.
I do like the fact that he made this category.
Mark Johnson, I believe you were holding out hope for this, right?
For Bashir?
For Bashir to like enter into this.
No. No, I wanted Fassbender.
You wanted Fassbender, right?
If I had a vote, I'd go Fassbender. Of the five, I'd go Pitt. Okay. But Fassbender to me was the best performance.
Fassbender did have an awesome year in general, and so did his penis. But I would be completely even for Michael Shannon in Take Shelter. Again, I made this no secret that I just really love this performance a lot. But all right. So here we go. Best Motion Picture of the Year, The Artist, The Descendants, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, The Tree of Life, or War Horse. Abe, where are you going with this?
I'm going to go with the mainstream, and I'll go with The Artist. But it would be fantastic if Hugo won, and it would also be equally fantastic if Midnight in Paris won.
Agreed completely with everything you just said. Hoban?
The Artist. My choice and the Academy's.
Johnson?
Yeah, I'd vote for Hugo or maybe The Tree of Life, but probably Hugo. And there's just nothing stopping the artist tonight.
Okay, so obviously I'll just recap every 24 of these categories. I'm not going to do that. That'd take way too long.
Yikes.
So yeah, those are our Oscar predictions, all 24 categories. This is all kind of moot because this episode comes out after the Oscars have happened, but we will have our results bonus episode the next day, tomorrow, when we record again, which will hopefully get posted very close to when this episode gets posted. So, you know, you can at least see our reactions to what actually happened.
So what you're saying is when people are listening to this, they'll get to see how much I
see how wrong Mark Johnson was. Just have him on again next year for our Oscars.
Right.
You definitely should recap after the count how many each person picked and see who won.
We'll do that.
The notes we'll have it all laid out, and of course the results show will go over this in scrutiny and make sure to poke so much fun at whoever lost every category.
I don't think any of us are going to be that. I mean, we're going to have ones wrong, obviously, but I don't think we're that.
I'm telling you right now, maybe. I've got everyone right. that's the case.
Never know, okay. Man.
Let's get to the end of things here. Okay, so next week we're going to discuss The Lorax is going to be our main plan. Maybe we'll add something else onto there too. But The Lorax is the new Dr. Seuss animated film, and this is the first Dr. Seuss movie I'm actually looking forward to seeing. I've been really like The Grinch and Cat in the Hat, and then Horton was high for me.
That's the best way to describe it.
So,
here's my little side note anecdote. I missed Kung Fu Panda, the first one to watch Horton Hears Who. I'll never live it down.
I know, like the ambulance are about to take you away for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so The Lorax. So let's do a little box office predictions for what we think The Lorax could do. Dr. Seuss films tend to do pretty good. And this is coming from Universal, the producers that brought us Despicable Me. Despicable Me opened in the summer to like $56 million. They also made Hop last year, and that opened to 37. I think Horton Hears a Who opened pretty high as well. It opened to $45 million. So, with all that said, what do we think The Lorax can make next weekend? Not very crowded. The only other thing that opens is Project X, which is an R-rated
comp. Not a family romp
like The Lorax. Abe, any guess?
I'm going to go with... there's still some movies out there in the theaters that people are still going to see. Plus, with Oscars, this is probably going to get a bump with,
The artist will make $2 million next weekend instead of one, so we'll see.
Yeah, but it's going to mess up, like, the placement of things. Oh, that's tough. I'll go with a solid $30
million. Solid $30 million, all right. I'll give you one higher. I'll do a solid $37 million. I think there's a Dr. Seuss audience is out there. So. Mark Hoban?
I will do $31
million. All right.
First place?
Yeah. Mark.
And this is Price is Right rules, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to go with $1, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to say it bombs, and I'll go $1.
Oh, dang.
But it should be known, I don't ever pay attention to the box office.
Okay, so I'll say 20th place for Josh Johnson with $1. I got it. Okay.
Can I rank it higher in the list with still $1?
You can if you want.
Okay, sure.
I would say third on the list and $1.
17th. All right.
Okay.
What else is coming
Project
out that weekend?
X
nothing.
Is the only thing that comes out that weekend.
I don't even know.
Oh, I'm sure that this will beat that. So I would say first place.
Well, you hope, but there are a lot of high school kids
that try to get the R-rated movies. No, they'll be paying for The Lorax to see Project X. Boom. Okay.
Right. Zac Efron.
Taylor Swift crowd. Okay, so The Lorax has a good cast. I'm excited to see this movie.
Good cast. Yeah.
Maybe an IMAX. Who knows? Okay. So that's going to do it this week for Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog site, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews. I'm just going to point this out right there. I wrote an essay, actually, about Midnight in Paris and Inception, a comparison piece that I'm quite proud of, actually, and I was really happy to do it. It's available on both my blog and on whysoblue.com, where you can also find other Blu-ray reviews. And so there. You can also find me at twitter.com/AaronsPS3. Abe?
You can find more of my work at walrusmoose.blogspot.com, two animals, walrusmoose.blogspot.com, and twitter.com/walrusmoose.
Mark Hoban?
You can find more of my work on my blog at fastfilmreviews.wordpress.com. That's fastfilmreviews, all one word. And also on Twitter at @Mark_Hoban.
Mark Johnson.
All right, I'm at awardcontenders.com, and I'm on Twitter under awardcontenders.com as well.
Great. Okay. You can find all of our other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe at iTunes, also at hhwlod.com. We can find our show, all the episodes there, as well as the other shows available on that network. Just a lot of fun shows about movies and comics and games. You can also find most of our newest episodes at outnow.podomatic.com. And you can feel free to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com and criticize all the terrible Oscar choices we made and wonder how we could have ever come up with those picks when clearly these other things won and they were all about those all along. As well as like our Facebook page at facebook.com/outnowpodcast. We'll be sure to, you know, I like having fun on the Facebook page, and you know, all our updates and stuff, all our blog posts and everything goes to that Facebook page. So, you know, check it out. Like it. It's pretty cool. And, of course, iTunes reviews and ratings. Easy to do. Really nice to have them. So, that's everything we got. Tomorrow, or whenever this episode gets released concurrently, we'll have a bonus episode follow it about our Oscar results. But until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Gross.